Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, all across the fruited plains. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Council of Elders show. Well, it's another day, the first day of the rest of your life. Are you ready for this? America is slowly coming out of the pandemic, and we're about to get to shake each other's hands and give each other a hug again. God bless you, you one and all. We are getting ready for a rousing show this morning.
Mr. Jensen Brooks has a very special guest from the East Coast. And he's got some information that you need to hear.
So make sure you get your pen and paper out. Make sure you press 1 on that phone if you want to ask a question or make a comment. And be prepared for some information. A friend of mine, Walter Smith, used to say, get ready to get some fat put on your head. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce some and present the others, Mr. Jensen Brooks.
Thank you, Oscar Percent, and I want to welcome everybody. Again, my name is Jensen Brooks, and I want to welcome and thank everyone for calling in to this week's edition of the Council of Elders Talk Show. Today is April the 24th of 2021, and before we get started, for any of you new listeners, I want to explain the purpose of the Council of Elders. The purpose is for older people, elders if you will, to give advice, counsel, and life experience to younger people. Advice that can help them navigate successfully through life, deal with issues, and avoid some of the pitfalls that can affect everyone. The concept is based historically on African culture, where elders in the community had council members to help guide tribe members, settle disputes, encourage young people. Young people are especially invited to call in today with questions or issues. Our dream is to have a Council of Elders group or organization in every community in America, and for the Council of Elders to be known about in the community so that people could have an opportunity to get advice from elders about their concerns. But it first starts with a single Council of Elders group. So we're establishing a group of elders here in the Sacramento, California area. We'd like to have about 10 volunteers. Once we get enough volunteers, we can go to youth centers, juvenile halls, boys and girls clubs, and churches, et cetera. We can also be available to young adults as well. Sometimes they need advice on how to raise kids, how to get along in their careers, their marriages, et cetera. Moving forward, this is an effort to bridge the gap between young people and elders. The younger generation today and the older generation should start to merge. The Council of Elders is an effort to do so. And with that, let me just say that we have a very special guest today on the Council of Elders show. And also, I want to remind everybody that at 1 o'clock Pacific time, 1 to 2:30, we have a Zoom conference, our second Youth and Elders Goodwill Summit on Zoom. So Michael Gant will be up in a little bit to tell you a little bit more about how to get on that Zoom call. So you want to grab your pencil and paper so you can be ready. And also our special guest is going to have some nuggets today, so you might want to take some notes there. Okay. Our special guest today is a man who lives in the Atlanta metro area. He is a certified public accountant, or CPA, if you will, and he's also a real estate investor. And just for transparency, I have known this man since I was probably 5 years old, and we had a chance to play cowboys and Indians and ride bicycles and roll car tires, everything that kids do in the country section of the United States. His name is Malcolm Hughes. Malcolm, welcome to the show. And if you would tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Dan, I think you told it all on us. You told about the days of rolling tires, playing cowboys and Indians, long range and Tonto and that kind of thing. But when I left Aliceville, I went to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and went to University of Alabama on an engineering scholarship. Didn't take me very long to determine that I wasn't engineer material when I took a calculus class, and the only numbers I recognized were the page numbers. I swiftly changed to accounting and finance as my major, and the rest is history. Became a CPA, worked in small CPA firms, and have done quite a bit of work for all types of organizations, from for-profit to government organizations, non-profit organizations, and so forth.
Right. And Malcolm, if you would enlighten us a little bit before we get started into the real estate part of your career. Generally, certified public accountants, how do they help people?
Well, if you're in business and as an individual, everyone needs a CPA. I don't care who you are, whether you're an individual or a business. It's quite frankly just a matter of can you afford one? We can help you grow your business through certified financial statements or presenting information to the bank, putting business plans together. Any endeavor that you go into business-wise, entrepreneur-wise, you will need a CPA on board to help you start that business, and maybe even sell that business.
Oh, okay, so CPAs can actually help people write a business plan?
You're going to need a CPA to write a business plan because you're going to need financial projections. You might need historical information. You may need an audit of the historical information for the past a history of your past few years of results of your financial operations. And so the bankers rely heavily on a CPA to certify that the financial information that you are preparing and submitting to them to get a loan is accurate and correct and credible. You won't get a bank loan if you're a business, without financial statements, and this is where your CPA will help you immensely. Your CPA is going to be a financial counselor to you. He's going to lead you. He's going to be able to introduce you to different concepts, to different entrepreneurial concepts, different ways of making money, different strategies that are out there, different ways of saving money. And, of course, everybody hates to pay taxes. So I think one of my major goals as your CPA is to limit your tax liability. So, that's your financial advisor is your CPA.
Oh, okay. Well, that's quite something, Malcolm. I know a lot of people who have businesses and want to get loans, maybe not know that a CPA would be very helpful in that realm. So thank you for enlightening us about that. Now, as far as your advice for people, maybe they're in their 20s, 30s, and just starting out, as a CPA, do you have any general advice that might be good for people to know?
Basically, Dan, I think it all starts with a budget. You could say that's one of the first pieces of financial advice I can give people. Start with a budget and monitor your spending. The next thing is to get educated on your finances. You need to become aware and knowledgeable of what the financial opportunities are out there that you can capitalize on. And so education is the key throughout life. I am a lifelong learner. Even today, I'm approaching 65, and I'm still learning new things every day. So education is the key thing as far as finances are concerned. Get a budget. The other thing I recommend, of course, I'm huge on real estate. I'm very biased toward real estate. So I would advise anyone to own a home. Yeah, you find some gurus out here that don't believe in owning, that home ownership is not good for you. But I believe home ownership is one of the keys, foundations to financial success. And so I would start with those three, a budget, educate yourself, home ownership, and go from there. We could also talk about other things like retirement plans, taking advantage of 401k plans at your job, setting up deferred plans versus Roth plans where the money is not necessarily deferred. The main thing is if you educate yourself, then you will learn how to grow your wealth.
Okay. Well, that's some very good advice, Malcolm. Malcolm, how did you evolve into the real estate investing, rental properties, and so forth? Just what was your evolution into that?
I think I always wanted to own my own home. I think that was the first thing. And quite frankly, it became even more prevalent once I was in college and was in an apartment and decided that I bought me a brand new stereo, Pioneer stereo back in the 70s. I think we were operating at about 20 watts per channel or something like that. And I couldn't play my music loud because my neighbors were complaining. And I always thought to myself, one, I want to play my music as loud as I want to, and if I own my own home, I could play my music as loud as I wanted to. And the second thing is, I don't know why, but for some reason I had an impression that if I own my own home, then I would always have a place to go. For some reason, I knew at an early age that people who rent homes, they could easily get put out of that home. And I think I had run across one or two people who were a little bit older and had no places to go or were facing a homeless challenge. And I never wanted to be in that situation. So the first opportunity that I got to own real estate, which I bought my first house at around age 23, I bought my house and I moved my new stereo from my apartment to my new house, and I played my music as loud as my wife would let me.
That's funny, Malcolm. You wanted the ability to play your music as loud as you wanted to. That was your motivation to get out of that apartment.
that was one of them. But again, like I said, Dan, I was I just wanted to own my own home. I always thought that home ownership was the ultimate at that point in time. You know, you're looking at images on TV or whatever, it was always about home ownership. And I just envisioned myself in that situation of owning my own home. Again, I didn't want to be like control, and I want to be in control of my life. I didn't want anybody to tell me I could come, I could go when they wanted me to. I just wanted to control my destiny. And for some reason, I thought that owning my own home would help me better control my own destiny.
Well, you're exactly right, Malcolm. I mean, a lot of the gurus in the areas of finance say that, real estate, it's one of the quickest ways to become a millionaire. I mean, home ownership, property ownership, I think that probably I'm right in saying that it's probably more millionaires in that arena than there is in any other, you know. So that would be good for anybody to start developing that mentality, because later on you might need some money, and you can always take out a second mortgage on your home and you know, do what you need to do with that. And so but you had a good mindset early on in your life, one that more people really should developed. So I commend you for that. So
you go ahead.
Go ahead, Ron. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say one of the things that you mentioned, a home equity line of credit. That was one of the tools that I used for one of my first investment properties. I had a little bit of equity in my house, and I went to the bank, and the bank gave me a home equity line of credit. I used that $20,000 or so to purchase another rental property. And it's been going ever since as one of the tools that I use in order to fund some of my real estate investments.
Right. Well, I think I'm right when I say that real estate is always going up. So if you get a home, you know, a few years later, chances are that you're going to be able to have some equity in that home simply because of that the value of that home is going to go up. So that's you use your home that you purchase as a method to purchase your second home.
Right.
Or your second property.
To purchase an investment property more so than a second home.
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Malcolm. Were you going to say something?
You had mentioned one of the things about keys to wealth, growing wealth. And I always thought that one of the things that I've learned in my college was that what you said was true about real estate. You have more millionaires in real estate than any other venue or source at that particular point in time. You made money, you created wealth through the financial markets, i.e. investing in stocks and the financial markets and owning real estate. That's the old way that millionaires were made. And since I knew that was ingrained in me from, like I said, an early age in my late teens or early 20s, then this is also another thing that kind of compelled me to invest in real estate, having that particular knowledge that if I bought a piece of real estate, then I could start immediately growing my wealth. And that has held true even today. I can give you an example of an appreciation in value. I was lucky enough during 2008, 2009 to buy a few houses, and those houses have increased in value over $100,000 since I first purchased them back in 2008, 2009. Basically, all my real estate properties have increased in value substantially, more than double over the years. And so you can always rely on real estate. But we always know that there's an up and down world, so real estate is going to go up and real estate is going to go down. My thing is I buy real estate when the values are down, 2008, 2009. Right now is an excellent time to sell, but quite frankly, I don't need the money, so I won't sell anything. I tell people who approach me about buying my real estate, hey, talk to my grandchildren.
Well, hopefully you can talk to him into holding on to it. It even growing that, Malcolm.
you know how they have these kids. You know they can't wait to get their hands on them and buy them a Lamborghini or Maserati or whatever it is that they want to do, or go to Korea and do K-pop or whatever it is that they want to do with their life, whatever their passion is. One of the things that has happened. No one shares the passion for real estate like I do.
Right, right. Let's just say if someone wanted to get into real estate business, they didn't have a lot of money. Maybe they don't have a down payment for their first house yet. Are there any ways that a person could begin to get into the real estate without a whole lot of money to start, and they can build as they go?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I'm sure many of us have been up late at night. These commercials used to be a lot more prevalent than they are now. And some guy would come on TV and say, hey, no money, bad credit, no problem. You can still invest in real estate. And that is very true, is what I found out. What it takes, again, I'm going to harp on lifelong learning, education. But if you have knowledge, then you can acquire real estate. One of the ways to acquire real estate is become what we call a runner, a runner is one of the terms that we use. And what a runner does, a runner would go out and find a house. He may pass by a house every day on his way from work, or it may be a profession for him. I think the word I was looking for is bird dog. You can become a bird dogger. And you bird dog houses. You find houses. You find investors that you want to deal with. If a investor found a house, if a bird dog found a house and bought me a house and I eventually bought that house, I would pay that guy $100 or $500. It could get up to $500 depending on how good the deal is. But again, the only thing he had to do was point out a house to me that was vacant and turn me onto that house, and I did the rest, and I acquired the house. He made money. Another way to make money in real estate with no money, no credit, is to become a wholesaler. If you that same bird dogger runner, if he saw that house and then he approached that owner and told that owner it could be a $100,000 house, okay, after repair. And he told that owner, hey, I'll get that house on the contract. I will give you, say, $50,000 for that house, okay? The owner may say, well, hey, I want to get out of it. A lot of times, again, you talk about the kids. They could be something that they inherited. They want a quick $50,000, so they'll stand on the deal, stand on agreement to sell the house to the wholesaler for $50,000. The wholesaler will come to an investor like myself and say, hey, I have a house for $55,000. That I have it on the contract. You can get it for $55,000. You can get it for $60,000. Whatever price that he wanted, the profit that he wanted to make on it. He has to leave enough margin in there for me to buy that house at $60,000, put 10, 15, 20 into it, say I'm in it for $75,000, and the house is worth $100,000 after I make all the repairs and maintenance on it. So now I am happy. I have a $25,000 equity in the house. The wholesaler has a $5,000 to $10,000 worth of gain that he has no money, no credit invested in, and the owner of the house is satisfied because hey, they got rid of a property, they may be in another state or whatever, and now they have $50,000 in their pocket that they can go and do whatever they want with it. So everyone is happy. Now you have a house with you have a situation again. I'm happy. The wholesaler is happy. And the owner is happy. Another way is fix and flip is where me as an investor,
Malcolm, second.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Malcolm, could you just hold that thought for just a minute because we want to make an announcement. Everybody,
sure.
You're listening to the Council of Elders talk show on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Jansen Brooks, and our guest today is Malcolm Hughes, CPA in real estate investment. And we have another show of Zoom conference coming on in a couple of hours today at 1 o'clock Pacific. And Michael Gett, if you would tell everybody about that and how they can join that, we sure would appreciate it.
Good morning, everyone. I hope everyone's having a happy Saturday and enjoying the great information that we're getting from Mr. Hughes. We want to talk about real quick that the Council of Elders Network Sacramento is hosting today our Youth and Elders Summit 2. It's our second one. We're going to be bringing to you topics, you know, like what questions do youth have for elders? What questions do elders have for youth? The goal today is to bring about an organic conversation with youth and elders. And Mr. Brooks, I'm sure, has some great topics that he's going to present. And what I want to make sure that everybody knows, if you can write this down, the Zoom access for today's meeting is as follows. The meeting ID number is 892-0407-5137. Again, that's 892-0407-5137. And the passcode or password is 870-447. That's 870-447. So we're going to begin promptly at 1 o'clock, and we hope to see as many of you there as we can. Thank you very much. And I do have one question for our guests, if I may.
Go ahead.
My question is this. I'm looking into starting to work on my budget. I'm retired, but I do have some small income streams coming in. So what I'm trying to do is track them, and I'm using the website Mint. What do you think about applications like Mint?
I think that I'm not familiar with Mint, but most of those applications are very helpful and very useful. So whatever application you can find and you work with it, if it works for you, then utilize it. Those programs are basic. I don't want to say generic. Some of them may be a little bit more specific than others. But whatever resources or tools out there, especially on the Internet, that I can utilize, I would certainly pick them.
Well, great. Thank you very much. And my last comment is that Mr. Brooks, if we somehow can think about maybe having workshop for directed specifically for you. Mr. Hughes, would you be interested in such an endeavor?
I do them all the time, so absolutely.
Great. Thank you very much, and I hope everyone's having a great day.
All right, right. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Thank you so much. And we'll be repeating the ID and passcode a little bit before the show ends. But, Malcolm, I believe we were talking about wholesaling, and then I think you were about to talk about flipping. So,
right. Fix and flip. I mean, that's basically why I would buy a house. Let's use that same example where I'm in the house for $75,000. The house is worth $100,000. So, what I would do is I would sell that house for $100,000, and now I have a $25,000 profit. And you can do that over and over and over. As you can see, you do that once a month. You do the math. What's that? $300,000 a year. If you can build yourself up to that volume. The other, what I like personally, I have done some flipping. I have done some wholesaling, not a whole lot of wholesaling. I just didn't get a whole lot of joy out of wholesaling. And quite frankly, some of my real estate investor friends used to laugh at me a little bit about the amount of work that it takes to do wholesaling. But my point is I'm a buy and hold kind of guy. So I like to buy property. I see my rent and hold on to it and rent it out. My rents have gone up from maybe from $1,000 to 10 years ago, and now the same property may be rent at close to $2,000 today. And so I like to buy and hold. And again, my rents have gone up. I've had a tenant paying my mortgage, if I had a mortgage on the house, and the value of my house has gone up over $100,000. So I think I'm winning on all ends. And so now I have an inheritance to pass to my children's children, so to speak, simply by buying and holding. Another way to make money is some new things coming out called Airbnbs. A lot of you have heard about Airbnbs. I operated an Airbnb for about two and a half years. It was quite profitable, but I found out it was better for me to do long-term rentals than Airbnbs. I would suggest to you guys, when you go on vacation, instead of staying in a hotel, you might want to check out an Airbnb. It's a whole different experience, and I've had a lot of success and met a lot of interesting people by renting out one of my homes as an Airbnb. One of the things that's going on, the hottest thing that's going on today as far as making money in real estate, something I am contemplating doing, again, you may have heard me say before, I'm looking at either retiring or starting something entirely new, and that's education, mentoring, coaching in real estate. And so a lot of people today are putting together a course and are teaching courses in real estate and how to invest in real estate, usually strategies that we talked about. Technology makes this all possible. And quite frankly, you would consider my operation a kind of a mom and pop, a small operation. If I had to do it all over again, if I was starting out today, I would do two things. I would invest heavily in technology. I would join a mentoring group, and they call them masterminds, I think what they call them. And I'm a big component. 90% of my real estate holdings are in single family residential, but I would invest in multifamily properties today versus starting out. I can't say instead of starting out, but I would graduate to multifamily versus staying in single family residential. I think people say good is the enemy of great. I've done quite good at single family residential. It's hard to make that transition to something to multifamily or technology course, coaching or educational courses. It's somehow hard to make it. It's so easy to do single family residential, and now I've got to start working all over again to get into multifamily or coursework. So that's a challenge that I face today. I'm praying over it.
Right. There's a gentleman that I listen to on YouTube. His name is Grant Cardone. And that's what he's into, multifamily. He does. He likes buying apartment complexes, and he's got them around the country. So, when you say multifamily, are you talking about that, or are you talking about duplexes, or what are you thinking?
Well, anything over two, a duplex, a triplex, a quad, I would small unit apartments, 20, 50 unit apartments, and grow from there. I listened to Grant from Cardone, and one of the things about Grant, he talks about thinking big. And I think as I sit back and look at my career in real estate, I'm thinking I did not ask the Lord for enough. I asked the Lord for these single-family homes. I should have been asking him for 50-unit apartment units or 200-unit apartment units. And I think he would have granted it to me. But that's the advantage that these kids have today is that they have exposure to so much more than I did at that time. And they think big. Grant Cardone believes in thinking big. You got to take baby steps first. But at some point in time, you want to level up to the big thing, the multifamily. And that is where I would advise anyone starting out investing in real estate at a young age now to level up the multifamily as quickly as you could. Now, you learn a whole lot. You learn the game in single family. You learn how to deal with realtors. You learn how to deal with contractors, tenants, and so forth. But that's your education. That's like elementary school. When you get to the multifamily, now you're in college or grad school.
All right, This is Oscar here.
And I'd just like to let you know you're listening to the Council of Elders show with Jansen Brooks and his special guest, Mr. Malcolm Hughes, a certified public accountant, financial real estate investor. And he is speaking to us on how to make the money. Everybody needs money. And so we have 30 minutes left. I just want to let you know that we're on every Saturday at 10 o'clock Pacific time. And please stand by for Mr. Jansen Brooks and his special guest to continue.
Thank you, Oscar. So, Malcolm, we talked about real estate investment clubs and as a way for people to start learning about real estate. Can you enlighten us a little bit about real estate investment clubs?
Well, I saw something on TV one time. This guy said, well, why do you rob banks? He was talking to a bank robber. He said, that's where the money is, okay? So if you want knowledge about real estate, you want to Google a real estate investment club. If you wanted to knowledge about real estate, Google real estate investment clubs in Sacramento, California, or in Atlanta, Georgia. I mean, we have probably hundreds of them here in Atlanta, Georgia. But that's where the investors are. That's where the players are. That's where the realtors are. That's where you're going to find funding for your from the banks, or you may even find a real estate investment partner at the club. You're going to find other like-minded people at the real estate investment clubs. Real estate investment clubs are a mini mastermind because that's where all the knowledge is. And you're going to find people from seasoned investors, multimillionaires at a real estate investment club to beginners or newbies, people who are just starting out in the real estate investing business. And, again, that's where the knowledge is going to be at the real estate investment club, and that's where the deals are made. It's kind of like you know, they say the deals are made on the golf course. And so you go to the golf course, you network, you get information, you find out what's buying, what's selling, you find out the strategies that you might want to be utilizing at this point in time in the real estate investment world. Again, that's where the knowledge is.
Okay, Mr. Brooks.
We have a guest who would like to ask a question or make a comment. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, caller. You're live on the Council of Elders show. Please state your name, where you're calling from. When you ask your question or make your comment, please mute your phone.
Guest number 3755.
You're live on the Council of Elders show.
Hello, Mr. Jansen.
Yes, Mr. Jansen.
I like the what Mr. Hughes was talking about how he got into real estate, and I can feel that because That's the way I look at it. I've been, you know, I travel all over the United States, and I saw a lot of people getting put out and stuff like that. And so that's what motivates me, you know, to get my house, because I never wanted to be caught in a situation to where as though my family didn't have a place to stay. So that motivated me to get my house. But I wanted to ask Mr. Hughes a question. I had a conversation with my son last night, and he told me he wanted to buy a house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but these days he don't know how to go. He was thinking about maybe starting off rent to own. Is that good or what?
Absolutely. That's one of the best ways to buy a house. I would take it a step further. Versus instead of rent to own, I would try to go owner financing and see if that owner would finance the purchase of that house for him. If he didn't have bank funding or loan in place, or maybe even you helped contribute to him purchasing the house. But rent to own is certainly one avenue. Again, if that owner is going to do a landlord/owner is going to do a rent to own, I would elevate it to another level and say, hey, what about you finance the purchase of this house for me? And a lot of times investors will do owner financing of that particular property, so that may be an option. The other thing that he wants to do as quickly as possible is obviously get his credit together so he can do the traditional route of getting a bank loan to finance the property for him. Or we talk about that real estate investment club. You may find some seasoned investors who, at some point in time, now what they would do is they are private lenders, and they may even finance that property for your son. So all those options that are out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also he was telling me that they got programs, but he has to wait because his credit score is not that. He didn't let his credit score go down, you know, get out of hand. Mm-hmm. And like I was, you know, me myself, I told him that was a good idea, you know, if he can't get a traditional bank, you know, maybe rent a home might be a good one. But I don't know, some people, you know, get into that rent to own and it don't turn out that good for them, you know, and the landlords want at least about $5,000 to $10,000, you know, and only a portion of it would be. But the problem is, let's say if they rent to own for 5 years, well, your credit, you got to have your credit established within about that 5 years time. If it's not, well, then you can lose your money. That's what I would thinking. I don't know.
There's always that possibility. But again, if you're serious about wanting a home ownership, you're going to get that credit together. And it shouldn't take 5 years to get your credit together. I would think 2 to 3 years max, and even shorter period of time that you could get your credit together while you're looking for a home to purchase. Another opportunity is to go the SBA route or the FHA route, where they will look at buying a duplex, i.e. buy a duplex, live on one side, rent the other side out, maybe another option if he can find that particular opportunity available to him. But working on that credit,
okay,
is all, you got to work on that credit.
Yeah. Yeah, now tell me something. One more question, I appreciate you if you can answer this here. You're talking about credit. What about those credit report, not reporting agency, but, you know, the company that go out there and fix your credit, you know, help you out with your credit. Is that good or mediocre or bad?
That just like anything, yes, you can find good lawyers, bad lawyers. You can find good bankers, bad bankers, good doctors, bad doctors. Some of those credit repair companies they do a pretty decent job. I would look for a credit education company versus a credit repair company myself. if you're interested in improving your credit, the internet is out there. Go on YouTube and look at credit repair, Google credit repair on YouTube or Google, and you will come across. So I can guarantee you come across at least 10 different people who are mentoring and coaching about credit repair, and they're going to have some of the best ideas that you can utilize in order to repair and improve your credit. YouTube and Google. That's where you want to go to find out information about credit.
Okay, I'll tell him that.
Educate yourself, because some of those companies are legit, like you say, and some of those companies are complete ripoff. And the whole spectrum in between is what you can expect.
Right, right. Okay, well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Mr. Jensen. Okay, y'all, thanks a lot.
Okay, John.
All right.
Okay, John, thanks for calling in. And
all righty.
Okay, and John, if you could mute your phone, that would be helpful as we move along.
Right.
Okay, so
okay. Thank you very much. I will.
Thanks for calling in, John.
Okay, thank you.
Those are some very, very good questions, Malcolm, talking about people that want to own homes and need to repair their credit. If I can mention one thing, there's a company called Credit Karma that helps people to, you can get a credit card, and then you pay it off on time, and you can start building your credit that way, and then they tell you your credit score every month, so you can know how you're going up or down. So that's just one tiny way to start building credit. Just get a credit card and just pay it off, on time. And that eventually they'll start raising it. And then pay off the bills that you owe would be another thing to do over time.
Okay. We got about 17 minutes of show time. So if anybody else would like to ask any questions, you are certainly welcome to press 1 on the phone, and I'm sure Mr. Jensen will let you in and ask any questions, make any comments. This is the Council of Elders show, and I'm sure that Mr. Hughes will have a way to contact him if you need more information about the topic this morning. God bless you all.
Again, I was going to say one of the things that you want to do with your credit is call your creditors and maybe negotiate the payoff terms. A lot of times the creditors will accept, 80, 90, even 50% on the dollar if you're going to go ahead and pay the credit balance off. But you can always call your creditor and negotiate terms. That'll help. And when you talk to your creditor, you want to make sure that you get it in writing that creditor is going to report the information to the credit bureaus so that it will be on file. You don't want to just go in and start paying off old credit and then it not positively impact your credit report.
Right. Well, I have to agree with you there, Malcolm. If you talking to a creditor and you tell the creditor, I would like to negotiate this down, a lot of them, rather than getting nothing from you, they would take half or 75% or something like that, rather than just not getting it at all. So that's good advice to call them and negotiate a settlement, and then over time pay it off. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Well, again, you're going to need to be in a position to pay that off as quickly as possible. But absolutely, that's what I'm saying. Another thing that you can do is to improve your credit is to increase your credit worthiness, i.e. obtain more credit. Talk to your credit card companies. If you have a credit card, talk to the companies to raise the limits that is out there. That is one of the factors that's going to be utilized in determining your credit score. How much are you using your credit? And so if you have a $5,000 credit limit, and you're using $2,000, that may give you one score. If you have a $7,000 credit limit because you talk to your creditor, your credit card company, say, hey, raise the limit on my credit card from $5,000 to $7,000, and you're still having $2,000, that's going to immediately raise your credit score. So that's just one technique to to raise your credit score is by increasing your credit limit.
All right, we have a couple more people
who would like to ask questions or
make a comment.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
All righty then.
Good morning, caller. You're live on the Council of Elders show. Please state your name, where you're calling from. When you ask your question or make your comment, please mute your phone.
Caller 8229.
Please state your name and make a comment.
Hello. Thank y'all for allowing me on y'all show today. I'm listening to all the things that's going forward, and it's very informative. I do have a question for Mr. Hughes that he could probably answer or tell me if it's true or false. My name is Walter, and I'm calling from Griffin, Georgia, right outside of Atlanta. And Mr. Hughes, my question for you today is I do a little property investment as well. And what I'm finding and running into is that this bidding war is going on out here. And you get a house, I'm finding houses that they're valued at $60,000-$70,000. The rental agents are asking $10,000-$15,000 over that price. And then you get into a bidding war. So you got a house worth $50,000-$60,000. The asking price is $70,000-$80,000. You get in a bidding war, and then I'm going to end up paying $110,000 for that house. Those are some of the things that I'm getting from some of the real estate agents that I'm dealing with. Is that true or false, Mr. Hughes?
Yeah, that is obviously that's what's going on, especially here in Georgia. The thing that I would advise you to do, first of all, I am very frugal, okay? I look for deals. But I can't even account for how many deals I've missed just because I wouldn't pay an extra $10,000 for a house. For instance, if someone wanted $50,000 for a house and I thought the house was worth $30,000 or $40,000, I'd walk away. And that was because there was a lot of inventory. Okay, and so I wouldn't take those deals. I look back and wish I had paid that extra $10,000 for that paid $60,000 for that house, because now that house is worth $160,000 or $200,000. But the main thing for me is the numbers have to work. What is my strategy for utilizing that house? If I can make money at paying $120,000 for that house, I will. If I can't make money, then I won't. As long as I'm going to make money on the deal, then I am more likely to go ahead and purchase that home and pay a little bit more than I want to pay. And that's based on prior experience for not paying that extra $10,000. Again, I look at all the deals that if I had to pay that extra $20,000, say, for a house 7-8 years ago, now that house would have appreciated over $100,000 in value, and I would still be up. Or if I could have rented that house out and made money off of it, one of the rules of thumb, general rule of thumb, if I'm going to generate 1% rate of interest on a property, then I pay for it. I.e., if a house costs $120,000, I need to be able to rent it out for $1,200 a month rent. And so that's just one of the rules. But, again, the numbers have to make sense. We found out that housing prices are increasing, especially in this local market. And so right now, based on the mistake that I made in not paying, I would rather go ahead and pay the extra $10,000, even $20,000 to purchase a home in this current market and take advantage of the appreciation and the value and the things that I could do with the strategy that I have for the house. Of course, I would not pay $120,000 for a $100,000 house, I don't think. But, you know, you just have to look at the numbers and kind of go from there.
Yeah, we have one more guest who'd like to ask the question.
Yeah, so the answer to that question is that's true.
Yeah, it's true. And can you make can you make money off the property? I think is what I'm focusing on. But obviously, with the market being as it is, especially here locally in Georgia, limited supply and high demand, certainly you're going to over, housing prices are going up, appreciating more and more and more. So you're going to have to pay more for a house. You're going to be in these bidding wars.
Okay.
Right. Thank you for calling, gentlemen from Griffin, Georgia. And we'll be talking about more relevant topics as we go along from week to week. But we have one more caller, you say, Oscar?
Yes, we have one more caller. Please hold.
Okay.
Good morning, caller. You're live on the Council of Elders show. Please state your name, where you're calling from. When you ask your question or make your comment, please mute your phone.
Caller 36606. You're live on the Council of Elders show.
Yes, once again, this is Michael again, Mr. Hughes. And the question I have for you has to do with I have several credit cards that are high interest, and I'm working to raise my credit score. I want to pay off some of these credit cards and to not be used again. But I've been told many times that if you pay off a credit card, not to close it because it'll ruin your score. But even if I keep these credit cards at zero, they're going to charge me money, for processing fees each year. What do you suggest?
Mm-hmm. I would weigh the risk of what's the card going to cost you a year? $50, $75 annual fee, or whatever. I probably would keep the card because it's going to lower your credit score, like you've heard. If you cancel the card, I would pay them off. I would also go to those particular credit card companies and ask for a lower rate, just like we talked about raising your credit limit from $5,000 to $7,000. If I got a 17% rate, I'm going to call the credit card company. Matter of fact, I do it annually. All my credit cards, I call them out once or twice a year. So, Wells Fargo, Bank of America is giving me credit at 7%. You know, I'm not going to pay you 10%. I'm not going to use your card. Can you help me lower this interest rate that you're charging me? So, again, there are a lot of things are negotiable. And one of the things about contacting that credit card company on an annual basis, a couple of times a year, is that they may not lower the credit score. They may not raise your credit limit, but they may make you aware of some other perks or terms and conditions or some other things that you could take advantage of. And so, but most of the time, I have rarely found it that I could either on a year increase my loan limited amount limit or decrease the interest rate that they were charging me on the credit card. And again, sometimes they have these loss and reward points and things like that that you can take advantage of. But negotiate with your credit card company. I think in my particular situation, everybody's situation is different. I'm not going to pay $500. I'm not going to get a card that I have to pay $500 annual fee for. But, you know, I'll go ahead and pay the $150 annual fee or whatever in order to keep credit and keep my credit score up and then have the money available for emergency purposes, because we never know, when an emergency might come up and we might need that credit card. And on a similar note, I have even purchased houses on credit cards on a temporary basis. If I need a $40,000 to buy a house, I could go out and those are the prices that you tell me. But I could go out and put a house on and get cash off of my credit card, buy the house, fix the house up, and go to the bank and refinance the house up a period of time. Take a year to refinance the house at a much lower rate.
Could I interrupt just for a second?
Sure.
If you're listening, if you're not in Talk to More, please mute your phone because we get a little background noise. The little microphone, or if you could please mute it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We got five minutes.
Okay. All right.
But that's pretty much my comment there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I want to make
thank
sure
you very much,
that
Mr.
we. Thank you, Michael. I want to make sure that everybody remembers about the real estate investment clubs. They're around the country. I live here in the Sacramento, California area, and I Google real estate investment clubs, you know, and we have a couple, I believe, and most every major city has one. And it's a way to go in and ask questions, meet people, network. Even if you're already a seasoned investor, it will probably be a good way to go in and just learn more so that you can improve your craft as a investor or real estate person overall. Okay, we got about 4 or 5 more minutes, and I want to make sure that I let everybody know about the Youth and Elders Goodwill Summit that's happening on Zoom today. The ID is, I'll talk slowly, 892-0407-5137. And the password is 870-447. It's going to start at 1 o'clock Pacific time. It's going to go to 2:30, and we're going to have some elders and some youth, and we're just going to be mixing it up, getting to know each other. We as elders want to find out what is on the young people's minds so that we can sort of target our efforts. So hopefully we can do that today. And I'm sure we'll have some networking going on, even though it's a Zoom conference. But we certainly want to thank Malcolm Hughes for coming on today. Malcolm, you're really talking about something that affects everybody, whether they are renting or owning or trying to build their wealth in real estate. One way or another, they're in some way involved in real estate. So for about the last maybe a minute or two, if you could just summarize, and then we will wrap it up.
Well, two things. One, I say education, be a lifelong learner. I can't help but continue to mention that I'm redundant in that. Always educate, learn, read, YouTube, Google information. That's going to be the key to it all. And as far as real estate is a team sport. You can't do it by yourself. You're going to need a team. You're going to need attorneys. You're going to need realtors. You're going to need bankers. You're going to need contractors. You're going to need relationships with different agencies that may fund you, send you tenants. And so it's a team sport. But the biggest thing about real estate that I found, a lot of people think they want to do real estate, and then they don't really take the steps to do real estate. I would just say, hey, pull the trigger, go out and do a deal. Go out to an investment club, network, like Danson said, and then do a deal. You know, find something where the numbers work. Give me a call. Run the deal by me. I can certainly give you my opinion on it. My number, 770-365-7473. Again, my phone number, 770-365-7473. And I just say, hey, go out and be great.
All right, Malcolm, that's some good advice. Go out and be great, everybody. Well, I just want to say again, thank everybody for listening to the show today. I think we had some very good information from someone that is not only talking the talk, but he's actually walking the walk. You know, you have a lot of talkers out there, but a lot of the talkers are not doing the walk. So thank you so much, Malcolm, for coming on the show today. And at this point, I think this is about the end of our show, and I'll just close it out with a short prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for a great show today. Lord, we ask that you bless everyone under the sound of my voice and bless their families, Lord, and you will bless our nation and our world. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, everybody.
Amen.
We'll do the same thing next Saturday, God willing, and tune in to the Zoom conference at 1 o'clock Pacific time today. All right, everybody. Thank you, and God bless you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's a wrap.
All right.
Everybody there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm signing off.
All right. Everybody, the show is over.